Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. If you were born in the past 20 years or arrived in Boston during that period, you've known only one director of the Museum of Fine Arts, Malcolm Rogers. He is, in fact, the longest-serving director of the MFA's 144-year history. When he told the MFA's board of directors last winter that he planned to step down soon, there were tears, as well as a standing ovation for a job well done.
Under Rogers' guidance, the museum has grown dramatically. He added new and renovated old galleries and oversaw the completion of the MFA's Art of the Americas wing. Attendance grew by 30% and the endowment tripled. No wonder Boston Mayor Marty Walsh thought it fitting to honor Rogers earlier this month with an official Malcolm Rogers Day.
Well, here at Radio Boston, we're declaring today Malcolm Rogers Day. He's here to talk about his 20-year tenure at the MFA and about the museum's future. And Malcolm Rogers, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Radio Boston. Welcome.
And it's a pleasure to be with you, Anthony.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. This is your chance to talk to Malcolm Rogers. Are you a regular at the MFA? Have you appreciated the way the museum has grown over the past two decades under Malcolm Rogers? What questions do you have about this much-loved Boston institution, including how it might change in the years ahead after Malcolm Rogers? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Malcolm Rogers, you know, we mentioned that list of accomplishments, and it's pretty much hard to argue with the idea that you've done a lot for this museum in these two decades. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud, I think, of changing the image of the museum, making it much more perceived much more as an institution that's at the very center of a wonderful local community. The other thing I'm very proud of is the colleagues that I have around me working as hard as I am to turn the museum round from the way it was in the 1990s to the extraordinary resource it is now.
Well, I want to talk about some of the specifics of that, but go back to that first point, and I think it's related to this. Sebastian Smee, a friend of this program, Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic for the Boston Globe, writes that your signal achievement at the MFA has been accessibility, getting as many people into the museum as possible and making their experience pleasant as possible. Would you agree that does that sum up well what you're most proud of?
Accessibility is key to me. I see the mission as bringing extraordinary works of art together with people from all walks of life. And that defines accessibility for me. And I've done it in very practical ways. For instance, we have the longest opening hours of any major museum in America. Kids are free at the museum. We have extraordinarily welcoming programs. And also, I've done some symbolic things like opening the Huntington Avenue entrance, reopening it.
Tell me about that. Why was that so important?
It was a time when I first came to the museum, when the museum was running annual deficits, was, I think, to some extent, a depressed and in a no-can-do frame of mind. And just one very small investment in opening the doors was a way of symbolizing things are changing. Mm. We are turning this place round, and we're welcoming you. You are part of the change, part of that turnaround.
Mm. Give us a sense, you mentioned that, of where the museum was when you came aboard in 1994. Big deficits, a perceived lack of leadership, attendance was down. This seemed like, for you taking on this job, a big hill to climb.
But, you know, I was a European coming to America. I think my attitude is somewhat different from an American looking at the job. Mm. I just thought, director of the Museum of Fine Arts Boston, that's a great, great prize.
Sure.
I didn't ask, are the conditions in place for me to be an immediate success? I wanted the prize and I wanted the challenge.
Yeah. And what was the biggest, I don't know, the biggest, what did you have to adjust to? What was the biggest cultural shock, I guess, the biggest difference between Boston and your experiences in working in museums in Europe?
I think the biggest shock, and it was a positive one in a way, is the fact that the museum is entirely privately funded, or pretty well entirely privately funded. So your public, whether it was a big donor or a basic member of the museum, they were all stakeholders and felt the museum was their museum and I was their director. In Britain, where everything was funded by the government in those days, people visited the museum and went away just thinking, oh, it'll be open next time I come. Here it's a very different, much more personal and an inspirational situation.
So you're talking about sort of public ownership, of course. Yeah. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is in Europe and also some museums, I'm thinking of the Met in New York, there are big chunks of public money that make these museums, that we can take them for granted. Not so here in Boston.
No, Boston, as I say, I think the Museum of Fine Arts is probably the largest privately funded museum in the world. So we don't receive millions from our city as the Metropolitan Museum does. So that gives me a very clear situation every year. We have to help ourselves. A wonderful audience makes a big difference, membership and so on. That all makes a big difference to our the healthy museum.
Well, the Boston Globe summed up some figures that tell a pretty interesting story. From 1994, the year you started, till this year, yearly attendance from 860,000 or so to 1,130,000. Annual budget, 76 million and change to over 100 million and change. But the endowment, here's the big thing, 180 million to over 600 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a real expression of this, pride of public ownership that you seem to have tapped into in a big way.
Well, it's great to have that endowment. I would say, to be honest, it's still a small endowment for an institution of our size. You know, that we're the Boston Business Journal just said that we were the largest non-profit in Massachusetts by a long way. We employ getting on for 1,000 staff. So I don't regard us as a rich institution, and still there's the imperative to build that endowment.
Sure. I want to mention something else here. I mean, sticking on the theme of funding, we mentioned that you put the MFA on much firmer financial footing. That tripling of the endowment is a nice example of that. But you told the Boston Globe before that still every year is a knife edge for the MFA. Is that just the reality of running an institution like the MFA?
In an arts institution, your vision, your mission, your sense of vision always exceeds the funds that are available.
Sure.
So budgeting time is always very tough. Sometimes, as last year, we ended up with a very nice surplus. But I can't tell you how much anxiety there is about dollars during the year.
Listeners, we're talking to Malcolm Rogers. He's the director of the Museum of Fine Arts Boston. He announced this past winter that he'll be stepping down. He's staying on the job for as long as it takes to find a new director, but he's with us now. He's been here for 20 years, longest serving MFA director. We'd like to hear from you. What questions do you have for Malcolm Rogers about the MFA? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take a call from Sam in Bedford. Hi, Sam. You're on the air with Malcolm Rogers.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My question was, I remember a time years ago when the museum was open free on Saturday mornings, I believe it was. I used to go, and I was a member at that time. And now I know the free time is usually after 4 on Wednesday afternoons.
That's right, Wednesdays.
When, low-income and families can't go because it's a school night. And I was wondering if you ever see a time again when the museum will be open on Saturday mornings for free.
Well, could I say two things in response to that? First of all, we have actually looked at the people who are visiting on Wednesday nights, our free night, and we have discovered that their demographic is pretty different from the people who visit during the daytime. The other thing that we've done is institute a series of truly remarkable, I think, free community days and days celebrating community festivals. So that's where we're doing more. I don't think at the moment Saturday mornings is a possibility, but those other things are happening. And, you know, I'd also stress that children and young adults up to the age of 17 are free, which makes us basically the cheapest family visit amongst the major institutions in New England.
Thank you, Sam, for that call. Malcolm Rogers, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about your background. You grew up in Yorkshire, England, and I'm curious how you came into contact with fine art and museums at a young age and how that might have shaped the kind of museum director you have become.
Well, I came from quite a humble background, living on a very, very small farm in a remote village in North Yorkshire, a long way from art. But my parents did, when I was about five, I guess, take me to a museum, and I remember that first visit. Whether they realized how important it would be, I don't know. Then my parents moved, and I had some health problems at the time, and my mother would take me to the nearest big city, and as a reward, after waiting for the doctors to see my swollen neck, I was taken to the museum. That was in Leicester in the Midlands, and again, those visits I remember.
Yeah, and what was the impression? What do you remember about them? What was it that inspired you to, you know, to make this your life's work?
Astonishing and strange things, and things that really set your imagination working. And really, in terms of my life work, I think of myself as trying to change people's lives, to try and get children to glimpse a kind of wonder they've never seen before at home, and for them to be interested in it, respect it, and to be stimulated by it.
Yeah. One of the things you're known for is shaking things up a little bit at the MFA, and some people have even called some of what you've done controversial, and we're thinking, for example, of the 1996 retrospective exhibition of Herb Ritt's fashion photography or Ralph Lauren's cars. And some people say, this isn't fine art, this doesn't belong here. You obviously view it differently. What's the best argument in response to the critics?
I want people to look at far broader aspects of their life than the traditional pantheon of paintings and sculptures and so on, and to look for qualities of beauty and craftsmanship and wonderful materials. Great museums like the MFA or the Victoria and Albert Museum in London were founded in the 19th century to improve people's standard of taste, to show them better things. I think anyone who came to the Ralph Lauren car show will never look at a car in the same way again. You have to think about the design, the materials, the craftsmanship much more carefully. Herb Ritz, I think, is a brilliant illustrator. If they were the woodcut illustrations of Winslow Homer produced in the 19th century, no one would have quibbled, I think. But because they're contemporary, they're commercial, so was Winslow Homer, they're controversial in some people's minds. And you know, we're revisiting that controversy. Did you know that?
No, tell me about this.
Early next year, we're going to have another Herb Ritz exhibition to see how he's aged.
Interesting. And do you anticipate a similar controversy and pushback, or do you think we've matured in a certain way?
I hope it'll get people talking, but we will see what the response is. It's to some extent, you guess how they'll respond.
Yeah, recently, you did something called, and I understand this was your idea, Boston Loves Impression. This was a crowdsourced exhibit in which the public was able to vote for their favorite impressionist painting. What was the idea behind that? Because again, I could imagine a sort of purist saying, really? You're going to let the public do that? Shouldn't the professional curators do this?
Well, museums have perhaps over their history been too much about control. And yet, as I say, the centerpiece of our mission is the public. And to understand their feelings, and also to allow them to be able to express their love of the things that you have, is a wonderful thing to do. People have said to me recently, why are you so keen on selfies? I thought you'd hate people with cell phones, you know, in the museum taking photographs of themselves. And I said, no, what they're trying to show is themselves bonding with a work of art and then sharing it with their friends.
Sure.
To me, that's wonderful.
Yeah. 1-800-423-8255. That's the number to call to connect with Malcolm Rogers, longtime director of the MFA. Get him while you can. He's going to be stepping down. Where are we, by the way? I mean, what can you say about the search for a new director your successor?
The search is on, but I have no idea when they will find someone. But obviously, there'll be, I imagine, a handover period. I'll do everything I can to help, but I don't know when it will be.
All right. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Andover. Hi, Paul. You're on the air with Malcolm Rogers.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just, Malcolm, I was wondering, what types of programs have you implemented in the MFA to develop appreciation in the arts with younger children? I know that we have been open for free for younger children, but what's been implemented and created there to help kids understand art?
Well, I suggest you go online at mfa.org and look at our programs for children and young people. There's an extraordinary range during the day, at weekends, after school, looking at art, talking about art, but also making art. And actually, those programs are growing exponentially. The area of programs that is growing most significantly is actually for young parents and kids, and that's something we're obviously passionate to encourage.
Mm. Paul, thanks so much for the call. Malcolm Rogers, tell me something about, I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of just sort of how, in how many pies your fingers were in. And what I'm getting at here is the total experience of going to the MFA. And by that, I mean, did you immerse yourself in the management of the museum store, the restaurant, the whole package? And how do you think about that connection between those accoutrement, I guess, and the galleries?
Well, obviously my background was curatorial.
Sure.
But when you take on a big job, you have to give some things up, and I have wonderful curators at the museum to advise me. The fact is, it's a very rich and complex job. I'm running a medium-sized corporation with many, many stakeholders who often have different bottom lines for the organization. So you have to be, now as a director, you have to want the whole job, not just choosing the art, the exhibitions. You have to want the whole thing. And that includes fundraising, PR, marketing, hiring, firing, talking with politicians, being ready to come on radio shows and talk to people.
Sure.
All that. It's complex.
Yeah. And in 20 years, I want to ask you what you like least about all of that, but let me start with the easier part. What did you like most?
The excitement of new ideas and the sense that you are changing the perception of the museum and actually changing the community.
Sure. Yeah, and now I have to imagine that as you look toward whatever the next thing you're doing is, there's going to be some part of this job that you're going to be relieved that you're not going to have to do.
Perhaps not quite so many meetings and not so much time spent on budgeting.
That's great. Let's go to Mariel, who's calling from Cambridge. Mariel, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's Mariel.
Mariel, sorry.
I think the MFA is a wonderful museum, and I really love going there, and I love drawing. But I'm concerned that if you don't have $20 or whatever the going rate is right now, you just don't get in. I think Metropolitan in New York charges a lot also, but they also allow you the possibility of paying of making a contribution if you don't have $20. And I think it would be really great in this cultural city to have the Boston Museum of Fine Arts have a similar policy.
I agree. I absolutely agree. At the moment, financially, we can't do that. As you know, the Metropolitan in New York is substantially funded by the city to tens of millions of dollars and also has an endowment of over $3 billion. Our situation is very different. That's why we have to rely on free hours on Wednesdays, children and young adults, free community days. But what I would urge you to do, think about it, is to buy a membership of the museum, which gives free admission every day of the year and is also something that's tax deductible. I don't know whether you know that. It's a great gift. It's a tax deductible gift as well. But membership can be the key to having the whole museum for free.
Marielle, thanks for that call. I'm curious, Malcolm, to ask you, the MFA, of course, major museum of sort of world importance, but there are a number of great smaller but really special museums around Boston, New England, and elsewhere. I'm thinking of a museum like the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum or the Clark Institute out in Williamstown. I was in Maine recently and was reminded again of the lovely small museum at Bowdoin College. There are lots of them. Where do you go? Where does Malcolm Rogers go to sort of, I don't know, find that special museum that, I don't want to say off the beaten track, but that isn't the MFA?
Okay, let me tell you, there are the two ways of approaching this. First of all, whenever I go to a new city, I go to the museum first. To be honest, it's usually a big museum. My own favorites are really small museums, like the Gardner, which is an absolute jewel. A favorite of mine is the Wallace Collection in London or the Gulbenkian in Lisbon. Museums that are on a manageable human scale. The trouble is with a museum like the MFA or the Louvre, people try to do it in one visit. You simply can't. You have to take them a bit at a time. The small museums, bring things to the right scale.
I'm glad you said that, because it's actually a great question I wanted to ask you, and that is, how do you recommend that people take in the MFA? I mean, I think you just answered it, a little bit at a time.
Yes, a little bit at a time. And one of my innovations, I don't know whether you know this, is our admission ticket gives two visits, not just one visit. So you can come back a second time free within a certain number of days, because you need at least two visits to even get a broad idea of the riches of the museum. Yeah. Otherwise, come in every lunchtime and study a different gallery for an hour.
Listeners, we're talking to Malcolm Rogers, director of the Museum of Fine Arts. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation. I'd love to ask you what some of your favorite works are in the museum. Are there works you leave your desk to visit, I don't know, once a day, once a week?
There are favorites in the museum, amongst favorite paintings, and to me it symbolizes the whole relationship between America and England, is obviously John Singer Sargent's wonderful child portrait, The Daughters of Edward Darley Boyd, which is one of the greatest portraits of children of all time. Another of the great portraits is El Greco's Fra Hortensio, probably his greatest portrait. Now, things that are a little... not exactly outside the portrait world, but are, let's say, 3D, not paintings. Some of our Egyptian sculptures are quite extraordinary. The Old Kingdom works have a drama and immediacy which is unique in the world. But I also love the decorative arts. We have a fabulous collection of silver, for instance, which has a sculptural richness to it, which perhaps takes people by surprise. I could go on.
What about a favorite exhibit from the last 20 years?
A favorite exhibit from the last 20 years? That's very, very difficult. But given that my first broad art experience was traveling around Italy as a student, I'd say I loved our recent Titian Tintoretto Veronese exhibition.
Let's go to Robert, who's calling from Beacon Hill. Robert, you're on the air with Malcolm Rogers.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Malcolm, for all you've done for Boston. My question is what you see the role of the MFA is in relation to the other arts institutions in Boston and the region, such as the Institute for Contemporary Art and the Clark and some of the others.
I think we absolutely are our partners. We obviously all lend to one another. We look at one another's schedules and try and complement them. And so we are all part of the scene. There's a tendency for people to see museums as rivals of one another. In fact, we all rise on the same tide. I mean, I'm fascinated with the contemporary scene in Boston at the moment, where we now have a healthy, wonderful ICA. At the MFA, we have a lively contemporary program, but we're trying to do something quite different from the ICA to complement what they do.
Malcolm Rogers, I'd love to ask you finally a little bit about the future. You've said in terms of announcing your decision to step down that the museum needs a pair of fresh eyes, is I think the way you described it to me last February. So this is a question perhaps for your successor, whoever that might be, but what needs to be done in the future, in the post sort of MFA, post Malcolm Rogers period?
Well, it is that constant looking forward, constant self-improvement, and the ability, which I think to some extent I've had, to seize opportunities and see a path forming through those opportunities. But if I knew the answer, there wouldn't be anything for another director to do. A different mind, a different pair of eyes will see it differently. I think that's an exciting moment for the MFA.
But you don't have a sort of ideal candidate in mind.
I do not. No.
You don't. So what are you going to do next?
Well, earlier this week, I was talking about a beautiful illustrated book that we acquired last year, and I said, every time you turn the page, there's a surprise. So I'm turning the page at the moment, and who knows what I'll find on that next page.
I think you told me, though, in February that you're going to take time. You like to travel, and I have to imagine you haven't had as much time in the last 20 years to travel as you might otherwise.
I like to travel. I like to have time with friends when I'm not fundraising. And I'd also like a challenge, I have to be honest.
Right.
I would like a challenge as well.
So even though you're 65, this isn't retirement?
I think the retirement isn't the word to use. I think one thinks of the next phase.
The next phase. All right. Well, Malcolm Rogers is director of the Museum of Fine Arts. He has been so since 1994, making him the MFA's longest serving director in its 144-year history. Malcolm Rogers, thank you for all you've done for the MFA, and thank you for coming in today. We're very, very grateful, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, the National Football League has had a disastrous few weeks. We'll check in with Bill Littlefield. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty.